Just how much money do we need to meet all our needs in retirement? Policymakers think they have a handle on what constitutes an adequate retirement income. But according to a new report, they're actually way off the mark because most measurements assume that retirees own their own home, and that's increasingly not the case. The report comes from the Leicester Centre think tank Per Capita. Its executive director, David Hetherington, he's speaking with our business editor, Cheryl Bagwell.
David Hetherington, welcome back to RN Breakfast.
Good morning, Cheryl.
Look, assessing how much money anyone needs for an adequate retirement is obviously fraught with problems, but why do you think the models used by policymakers are particularly flawed?
So this new report from CAPA, Per Capita's Positive Ageing Centre, picks up on a worrying trend amongst people going into retirement, and it's that increasingly they do not own their own home and certainly don't own it outright. There's been much talk in the public debate about retirement incomes and reform of the system. Separately, there's been much talk about the affordable housing crisis, but these two things are coming together in this trend where people are retiring increasingly in private rental homes, and all of the benchmarks that policymakers use assume that people go into retirement owning a home outright. It's just not true.
So what's the reality? I mean, what proportion of people are retiring without owning their own home?
So at present, 15% of over 65s are going to retirement in private rental. That proportion is expected to double, or sorry, the numbers are expected to double by 2026. We know that from the last census, 10% of over 65s are formally classified as homeless. There's a lot of couch surfing going on. And when you put all of this together, it paints a picture that is really unrealistic when it comes to how politicians and policymakers think about the retirement income system.
So before we get to that, you're saying that the proportion of people retiring out without their own home will increase over time, presumably as housing inaffordability becomes a bigger problem. And that's not just for people on low incomes. You're talking about people on middle incomes as well.
That's right. It's across the spectrum. So presently, around 80% of older Australians own their own home. As with the broader population, that number is expected to fall to about 55% by the middle of the century. So over the next generation, more and more people are going to find themselves in this situation. And if we take the perspective that we simply need to provide enough for food, utilities, basic living, but not for housing costs, we will create a generation of people in retirement who are really just making ends meet.
So exactly on your calculations, how does this affect their retirement income when you add in housing costs?
So let's take a well-recognised standard, which is the ASFA standard for a single person in retirement on a modest standard of living. That's $23,000 a year. It's very, very limited. We're looking at least an extra $10,000 a year for someone in private rental housing. So it's 50% roughly higher than what the existing basic standards indicate.
Why is it important, that policymakers take this into account? I mean, what difference should it make to policy? I mean, we already know that most people will retire within adequate super balances anyway. This information doesn't really change that.
No, but think about where a lot of the current focus is on in the superannuation debate, for example. It's about the shape of the tax concessions at the top. What this information suggests is that we need to be focusing more and more on the middle and the bottom. So any savings we can make at the top should be channeled back towards the middle and the bottom. The low-income superannuation contribution, which was removed in recent years, should be reinstated. We've also got to think about the basis for the pension. At present, the pension is simply a politically negotiated figure. We'd like to see some independent analysis of what a reasonable pension would cover in terms of housing, food, utilities, all the basics.
And is it more evidence that compulsory super won't lift the burden on the age pension anytime soon, certainly not as much as previously perhaps hoped for?
I think that's certainly the case. I think the structure of the superannuation system has worked very well for a cohort of people, typically men who've worked full-time throughout their careers, but for different cohorts, people who've had mid-career transitions, for people, in particular women, who are A, suffering a gender pay gap, but B, often in and out of the workforce for caring reasons, super hasn't delivered them the balance they'll need, and that's going to put more and more pressure on the retirement income and particularly the pension system.
As you mentioned, the policy debate to date has been mostly around whether or not to wind back tax concessions on super, which appear to favour the well-off, many of whom were never going to perhaps be on the age pension anyway. Now, you say that this data shows that there is a real reason now to look at the tax treatment of super. I mean, the government hasn't made an announcement yet, but you say that this is where they've got to focus?
Oh, absolutely. I think the policy case is overwhelming. And really, I think you're seeing near unanimity now from many different stakeholders across the spectrum saying, look, we need to find savings in this system. The concessions at the top are not justified on any kind of public interest grounds, and what's more, they're unfair. But I guess we're saying, in addition, we need to be focusing on the middle and the bottom. How do we bolster the incomes of those people over the next 30 years or so, knowing that more and more of them will have to stump up for housing costs too?
And how do you propose that happens?
Well, as I said a moment ago, I think very simply reinstatement of low-income superannuation contribution. I think exploring other ways to channel savings from superannuation tax concessions back into the bottom of the scheme, perhaps by providing super for periods of parental or other leave. And I think we would do well to have an independent authority assess what constitutes the income needs of a basic pension, and to set a pension independently, perhaps, rather than through the political system.
We'll have to leave it there. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Cheryl.
And that's David Hetherington, Executive Director of the think tank Per Capita, which has just released this report called Getting the Measure of the Problem, Retirement Income Standards and Real Adequacy. Our business editor, Cheryl Bagwell, the reporter.